Hello and welcome to another episode of Warm Blanket, the podcast where we embark on a journey to see what makes us feel good about Star Trek, where is our love comes from, and what it means for us. In short, what is our warm blanket? My name is Gary and I'm your host, and I'm very honored to welcome here Dan from the YouTube channel Kurt Rats. In the past 4 years, he dived into multiple aspects of the Star Trek franchise, from books and lore through news and updates. His new podcast called Positively Trek captivates people from all ages, and it is available in many multiple podcasting platforms. Let's give a warm welcome to Dan. How are you today?
Oh, sir? I'm doing really well, and thank you so much for inviting me on. I'm honored to be here.
The honor is really, really mine, and I couldn't help notice, obviously the audience won't be able to see this, but you do have a blanket around yourself at the moment.
I do. It's where I live, the weather has been kind of gloomy and rainy and chilly today, and I do all my recording in the basement, so it's kind of cold down here.
So it's like I was secretly wishing, like, you're gonna say that I was just preparing because, you know, the podcast called Warm Blanket, I'm gonna have one too.
Yeah, it works out perfectly.
No, that's awesome. So, you know, we know each other well, we haven't really hung around a lot like in this fashion, but we know each other for a few years now, and I must say, I think it took me about 2 years to figure out what your channel called, actually, what your channel means. Like, how did you come up with the channel name?
It's actually funny. Like, I think it comes from just playing video games back in the day and having to come up with some kind of handle for my little, like, playing Counter-Strike or something like that. And mm-hmm. I was like, Kurt Rats, Star Trek backwards, that works. And it just kind of stuck, and I've used it ever since. So, you know, my Twitter handle's at Kurt Rats, and I was trying to think of, you know, what should I call this new YouTube channel I'm starting? And I'm like, what the heck, Kurt Rats Productions. It's just, it's something that's stuck all this time, and you know, it's kind of fun to see people's reactions when they kind of piece it together and figure out that, oh, it's just Star Trek backwards.
it's crazy. Like, it bugged me so many times because, you know, like with mine is kind of easy. Trekker Prize is like you put together Trekkie or Trekker and Enterprise and get Trekker Prize, or like with Katvorsky, it needed a bit of an explanation as well, like what Katvorsky means, and yours, like, we had a few conversations, I remember, with Trek on the Tube that we had regarding just your channel. I'm like, I have no idea what Gertrude's is. And I think two or three times we had this, and at one point, I think I texted you at one point on Twitter saying that I've just got it. I can't believe that it took me so long.
Yeah, but no, it's a fun one. It's not something, I bring it up every once in a while on the channel. I'll kind of, you know, in a video mention that. And I think I had an interview with Garrett Wong, and I had him say it as kind of a bumper. So, you know, it's here and there sprinkled out, but if you're not really closely watching every video, it's easy to miss for sure.
Did he ever figure it out, or Garrett Wong? Not to make him embarrassed or anything, but...
No, I have to admit, I just actually told him. I was like, oh, could you say, you know... you're watching Kurt Rats Productions, that's just Star Trek backwards. And he was like, oh yeah, I'm totally game for that. So
wow, okay, well, I would have seen his face, like, realizing like what this Kurt Rats was, and it's like, oh, I see, clever. That would have been an interesting one. So I guess we could start at the very beginning of this whole conversation, and ask the age-old questions. Question to when, or rather how, did you get into Star Trek?
Well, I've been a fan of Star Trek since way early days in my life, to the point where, you know, I don't remember exactly when it happened, but there are a few things that definitely contributed to it. So I remember as a kid on Saturday mornings, you know, kids always watch their Saturday morning cartoons. Here in Canada, our local CBC channel, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, they had Star Trek, the original series, playing. I think it was either at like 8 a.m. or 11 a.m., something like that. Mm-hmm. So I remember I would be watching cartoons and then I'd switch over to Star Trek or vice versa. I can't remember exactly, but you know, there was definitely an hour every Saturday morning that, oh, I'm sorry, cartoons have to be put aside. I'm watching Star Trek now. And the other thing I really remember is my mom bringing home the VHS rental copy of Star Trek the Motion Picture. And I can just remember the moment sitting down to watch it, kind of like not really knowing what it was or something like that. And seeing those Klingon ships pass by the camera, and the camera does that big rotate, and they come and they're heading towards the cloud. And I just remember watching that going like, what is this? This is amazing.
It's such a grand movie. And the moment I remember vaguely as well, the first time watching motion picture, that's definitely an experience for a lifetime in many ways. Like, first adventure for the original series crew, and then just, you know, the memories that you come up with, that you have fondly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody talks about how long the scene is where Kirk's flying around the Enterprise looking at it, and I'm like, can we do 10 more minutes of this? This is beautiful.
Yeah, no, that being said, though, it's good that they didn't do it for the second movie, because, you know, they use kind of a similar structure for boarding the Enterprise, but mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that would have been a bit too much.
Definitely.
So being a Star Trek fan and Star Trek being in your life for such a young age, what would you say the show did affect your life, or in terms of the profession that you chose, in any level?
I think it definitely affected me in a number of ways. You know, Star Trek has always been a big influence on my life. So, you know, early on it was cool. It looked gorgeous and, you know, that was all neat. But, you know, as I grew older, I kind of absorbed a bit of the messaging in Star Trek and the, you know, the hope for a better future and all that sort of thing. And I think it might be partially, I want to say, to blame for me going into teaching and that sort of thing. And, you know, picking a profession where, you know, people get altruistic and say, oh, I want to make the world a better place than when I came to it, you know, or whatever. I think that definitely had an impact of some kind, you know, wanting to be that positive influence that Star Trek is as well.
Mm. And you did become a teacher.
I did. Yeah. Yeah. I taught for a number of years. Not sure if, you know, when the world gets back on track after coronavirus, which we're all living through right now, if I'm going to be going back to that or not, you know, not sure. My career's kind of gone through different, you know, oh, let's try this. You know, I was born in 1982, so I'm a millennial, right? We just stick with a job for 3 or 4 years and then move on. That's kind of what we're supposed to do, apparently.
Wow. But within all of these years that you've been a teacher and then, you know, teaching students and pupils, have you ever gone into a class dressed up as a Star Trek personnel?
I have not. Beyond Halloween when, you know, I was in elementary, I think I did that a couple of years. But no, I actually have a teacher friend who's currently a principal who has done that and has pictures of him in his classroom with his uniform. And like, I'm still like, that's brave. I would not do that. But that's amazing.
Gosh, I remember back in early in my life, I wanted to become a teacher as well, but life played a bit of a different role with me. I'm not going into too much details because this is not about me. I mean, in a sense it is, but it's not. But I remember when my mom made my very first or second the first contact uniform. She's a tailor, and she I was like, I was begging her to do something. So we went to the fabric store together. We got the bright colors and everything, and I showed her so many
cool
pictures, and she made it, and it's really good. I think I still have it, but unfortunately I can't fit it anymore. And I remember going into school in the uniform, and obviously everyone made fun of me, saying that like what of the joker you are. And then, you know, even one of my teachers was like, are you sure about this, Gary? Like, of course. Like, if you wear your baseball you know, shirt, or you wear your basketball team shirts. Like, what is the difference?
Yeah, same thing. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, apart from, you know, being a teacher and being a Star Trek fan, you're an avid model builder. As far as I know you from your Twitter feed, and we did exchange a little bit of a communication on that too. How many models did you build, and why you enjoy building models?
I'm not sure how many I've built over the years. Quite a few. Lately, I haven't been building as much, and I can't even unfortunately say it's because of a lack of time. I've got lots of time on my hands right now. But yeah, for some reason, I've kind of not been doing a lot of that lately. But yeah, I love building models. I think I started when I was really young. And of course, you know, mostly because they were Star Trek, right? Oh, here's a Star Trek thing I can get and I can try out. And my first few were obviously disasters because, you know, building models pretty tough. And, you know, when you're 10, you think you can do anything. And no, it does not look good. But over the years, I've come back to it a few times. When I was in university, I actually worked at a hobby store. And of course, that helped quite a bit. Bought a bunch of models and learned from people who were a lot better at it than I was. And I've kind of branched out from not just Star Trek. I've also done other science fiction models. And even a few, for a little period in my life, I kind of got into building World War II airplanes and stuff as well. Right. But now I'm pretty much focused back on Star Trek and Star Wars and Battlestar Galactica. And, you know, they don't make Stargate models that I've found anywhere. They need to do that.
They need to, definitely. I mean, even though I'm not a massive Stargate fan, but it would be awesome to have like a Stargate, the SG-1 version, or even all three of them.
Yeah.
That we got to know, that would be awesome. Or any of the ships, or the pyramids, or I don't know. There's a lot of. I mean, that's a whole different, you know, YouTube channel for Stargate. Do you still remember the first model that you built?
Oh man, trying to think back, it was probably. It might have been, I remember I had a three-piece Klingon, Romulan, and Original Enterprise model
kit. Oh, one
kit.
Of those AMT kits, right?
Yeah, that might have been the first, or close to the first. But yeah, it was a long time ago. That's one of the first ones I remember trying my hand at, and I don't think the Klingon ship came out very well. The Romulan ship looked pretty good. I can't even remember if the Enterprise was anything close to a good model or not. I probably messed it all up.
But I can imagine that you don't have the model now. Just
no,
because
you
thinking about it as a fun memory.
Yeah, that one is long gone.
Oh, bless. So, do you prefer in terms of modeling? Do you prefer, because you know you. At this time, with Hero Collector or Eagle Moss, you can buy all the ships. With, you know, not talking about like, you know, nitpicking or, you know, the window not aligned or anything. But now that a lot of them are available, do you still prefer building them? And why do you prefer building them instead of, you know, buying them?
That's a good question. I do have a lot of the Eagle Moss models. I did collect them for a long time until. They just got to be too many, and I was like, okay, I gotta stop. And they are gorgeous. The thing is, with the Eagle Moss models, you know, everyone's looks exactly the same. There's no kind of personality into it or that kind of thing. I feel like when you build a model kit, there's more of you in there. And, you know, it is a lot more work, and sometimes that work may not be worth it. But, you know, sometimes you come out with a model that just looks amazing. My favorite one that I did in the last few years is actually the Cylon Raider from the new Battlestar Galactica. And that was the first time that I really, like, weathered a model. So I got in there with, like, pastels and gave it, like, some weathering and some dirt and you know, I guess bullet hits and that kind of thing and scratched paint. And I love it. I think it looks really good, and no one else's will ever look exactly like that one. And I just think that's kind of a neat thing to have on your shelf.
That, absolutely. That I mean, the only thing I had a really my really first model. I think I've got an Enterprise, one of the AMD ones, but like the really like old ones. And I've got it from a classmate of mine who used a silver heat resistant paint in it. Just like he covered the whole thing, and instead of using the decals for the registry number, he actually carved it in.
Oh wow!
And it looked ridiculous, like the worst thing that you can imagine. And I still have that model. My mother broke it twice. Sorry, mom. She broke it twice, and I still keep putting it back together. And got some donor parts. And you know, even though I have more sophisticated models ever since, and I myself have, I would never get rid of that one model.
Mm-hmm.
I would be like, if if something would happen, I was like, okay, that stays. Even though it's nothing to do with anything, it just, you know, just reminds me of my first model, which is an awesome thing to have.
Yeah, it's got that special meaning to you. Absolutely. Like, you know, if I had an Eagle Moss model that was, you know, one of the extra large ones or whatever, that, you know, I'd paid a lot of money for, and it got destroyed or damaged or whatever, I'd feel bad. I'd be like, oh, I spent a lot of money on that. That sucks. But, you know, having something that you made or something like that that means a lot to you, that means a lot more to lose that. So, you know, I think that's kind of the answer right there, how much it's worth to you. Yeah, you know, exactly. That's that really says something.
No, and it is true. And just as you said, like, if you have, you spend the same amount of money that probably 500 other people spend the same amount of money on it, then it's not as special when you spend countless of hours to put it together the way how you want to have it.
Yeah, again, not to knock it. I have lots of models and I love them.
Absolutely. So we talked a little bit about history in, I know it because, you know, Star Trek, how did you get in, and of course went into a bit of a modeling as well. I know that you, being in Canada, you're kind of close, sir, to that one location that kind of became a Star Trek pop culture icon in Alberta, that little city called Vulcan. And I know you made a video about it, but I really just wanted to touch on a little bit. How was that going to that kind of made up historical place? And because many people probably seen the movie Trekkies with Dennis Crosby, a fantastic little place. What is it? How was that for you?
It was a great experience. It's kind of funny, having lived in Alberta for almost all of my life. I left for a few years, but then came back. I hadn't been to Vulcan until just a couple years ago, which, you know, I tell other Star Trek fans that, and they're just amazed. You know, I even lived in Calgary, which is a lot closer to Vulcan than where I'm living now. And I lived in Calgary for a few years, and I just never made it there. And yeah, that trip that I took kind of almost had me kicking myself for not doing that sooner, because, you know, of course I went during the convention that was there, Vulcan. And there's just so many great people that embrace that and just have so much fun with it. You know, local businesses that, you know, deck themselves out in Star Trek paraphernalia, and there's, you know, like a bust of Leonard Nimoy there that he has visited and signed, and these murals on the sides of buildings. Like, there's one that features just all the doctors from Star Trek for some reason. It's so great.
Is it like, you know, is it like a GP practice? It's a medical facility, or?
That's what I was trying to figure out. I was wondering if it was a doctor's office. It was. We were there when it was closed, and I didn't go around to the front side to see what, you know, was on the front of the buildings. But yeah, there's just so much neat stuff there, and of course the big roadside model of the Enterprise that they've got there, and all that stuff. But for me, like, all of that stuff was neat, but for me the biggest thing was the people and just meeting them and their stories and, you know, what Star Trek means to them and what it has meant to that town. You know, there's always the story that they wanted to have a premiere of Star Trek 2009 in Vulcan, and Paramount Studios was like, oh yeah, let's do that. oh wait, there's no theater there big enough for that. So I think what they ended up doing was like busing a bunch of the residents to Calgary to for a premiere or something like that. But yeah. I love stuff like that. It's just such a, it's in so many ways a stereotypical small Alberta town, but at the same time it has this whole Star Trek element that is just bizarre and wonderful.
Is it a place that you would like to go back in a future?
Absolutely, yeah. I would love to make it kind of a regular thing to attend the convention there. I think it would be a lot of fun. Yeah,
they do it every year as well, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. I've still only been the one time, unfortunately.
But you've been in so many conventions. I mean, you've been in Las Vegas as well, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I've been there a few times over the years.
All right. Well, Justin, talking about Vulcan, have you been in the other, all the other historical Star Trek places like Vasquez Rocks or you know, the Van Nuys Water Reclamation Park in Los Angeles, or all the other places?
Yeah, I actually have not made it there. The closest I've done was a few years ago. I think it was 2009. Oh, man, a few years ago. That's 11 years ago now. Crazy. Yeah. But some friends and I took a road trip down the West Coast, all the way down from where we are in Canada, down, you know, the Oregon coast and California. And for me, you know, driving across the Golden Gate Bridge was just such an amazing thing. You know, Star Trek, there's so much set in San Francisco, so... Yeah. You know, driving across that bridge, I'm thinking of Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. I'm thinking of, like, all the establishing shots of Starfleet Academy and all that stuff. But beyond that, no, I've never really made it to any of those other landmarks. I have a friend who, kind of a friend of a friend, started the whole, you might have heard of Geek Nation Tours. They do a bunch of tours of places like that.
Is that one with Larry Nemechek or...
Yeah, they've partnered with Larry over the years and stuff, too. Yeah, and so they do tours of, like, the Vasquez Rocks and all of those places as well. And, yeah, I've always kind of wanted to get involved with them and do stuff like that, but just the opportunity has not presented itself yet.
Well, once this whole situation blows out of the air, hopefully, mm-hmm. Look forward to see that video on your channel.
That would be amazing, yeah.
And talking about your channel, Positively Track, the podcast, how did that came by?
That came by mostly myself and Bruce Gibson, who's my co-host. For a few years, we've done literary treks on the Trek FM network, where we talk about Star Trek books and comics. And I love that. I've always loved that aspect of Star Trek. However, a lot of times when we're recording the show, we kind of have discussions before and after we turn off the microphones about everything else in Star Trek. And we're like, you know, we want to talk about all the rest of Star Trek. Like, you know, we're kind of not pigeonholed, I guess, but we're kind of narrowed focused. When we're just talking about the books and stuff, we kind of wanted to expand that and talk about more to do with Star Trek, all the aspects of Star Trek. And a trend we've been seeing lately is this kind of strange negativity when it comes to Star Trek. And I'm not just talking about criticism or legitimate complaints about television shows and films, because that's fine. You know, people can have legitimate complaints and, you know, legitimately not like things about Star Trek, but when it's done in such a nasty manner. So, for example, people on Twitter who will tag the cast and crew of Star Trek Discovery and tell them that, you know, they're doing such a horrible job and, you know, this is not real Star Trek and Gene Roddenberry would hate them and stuff. Like, that's just nasty. You don't do that. So, yeah, we kind of wanted to bring, like, a positive talk of Star Trek. Not falsely positive, not, like, just being positive for the sake of being positive. We legitimately sometimes have some criticisms and that kind of thing, but we want to engage in a positive manner and talk about things in a fun way, and instead of a slagging people off way, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely, and I think you guys do a fantastic job, and yeah, it's just really good to have this, and many other podcasts as well among yours, of course, to have them up there and then just listen to it and just have a laugh for that 1 hour or something. It's always amazing, and yeah, no, you're doing, both of you are doing great, and I do have to touch on something else that I think it's another kind of podcast that you kind of started doing, the Unready Room on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
So is this like a second podcast? Because you have some amazing guests in there as well. I mean, there's not guests, like there's an established crew in there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that kind of started. So yeah, it was kind of it's a live show that we do on Fridays. And originally it was just kind of during the period of time that Star Trek Picard was on the air. We wanted to do like kind of just a live show discussion of the most recent episode, that kind of thing. During the run of Star Trek Picard, of course, this whole coronavirus hit and everyone's kind of stuck in their homes. And some of us, you know, don't have jobs that we're going to every day right now, and all that kind of stuff is happening. So we thought, like, let's keep this up while this is going on. Let's, you know, we've got, nobody's going out on Friday nights to bars or restaurants or partying. So, you know, why not stay in and, you know, watch some nerds talk about Star Trek? So, yeah, we've been just basically polling the commenters to pick an episode. And, you know, we get a few suggestions and put a poll out on Twitter, and the next week we end up talking about that episode. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun. It's just kind of something that we're doing just basically for fun, and we'll see how long it goes after the, you know, after this all blows over, like you say. Hopefully that happens sometime soon, but I wouldn't mind keeping up with this, maybe not on Friday nights in the future, but you know, I it's a lot of fun. I love doing that live show. I've always been kind of, you know, not afraid, but a little bit nervous about doing live show stuff, because if you watch my channel, it's heavily edited, right? Like, I'll be talking and I'll mess up a line 20 times and I'll edit it till I get it absolutely right. I can't do that when it's live. It's a little scary.
It is. I think that's one of the reasons I never did that in my 4 years producing videos. Like, no freaking way. I got better at it, but we both know like how much time and effort goes into one video, and yeah, but you're fantastic. I mean, I remember there was one point when you did weekly Star Trek news, and I think at one point it went on to a monthly one, because I guess, you know, that weekly was around the time when Discovery started happening in production, and a lot of news and guest announcements, these sort of things, and really structured and really good one. But why did I want to go with this? No. So yeah, no. Those are always so amazing and very good to, you know, just to get an overall summary, like, hey, what happened in Star Trek, and I really enjoyed watching those, and I hope once, you know, everything comes back to normal, you will make them as well, because I think they were really informative and entertaining as well.
Oh, thanks a lot. I appreciate that.
No, it's true. I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, put everyone into the biggest pedestal, and I'm just being honest. But would you say you're more, because obviously you do a fair amount of videos, would you say you're more like a podcaster or a video content creator?
That's a good question. I feel like I'm kind of straddling two different worlds a little bit most of the time. You know, my YouTube channel, I think I've struggled a little bit trying to figure out what I want to do with it exactly. So like you said, for a while I did kind of do the weekly news thing. I've also had this series, and I put series in quote marks because it's been laying fallow for a long time, which is the Trek lore series, where I talk about like a person, place, or idea in Star Trek, and I haven't gotten back to that in ages. And you know, I look at some channels like Trixpertise is one, for example, who does these amazing video essays about Star Trek. And I'm like, wow, if I could get to that level of polish on videos, that would be amazing. Steve Shives is another one with his ongoing Trek Actually series is something that I'm like, that's a lot of fun. Like, that idea is really cool. I like that idea of doing video essay type stuff. I've been finding my productivity lately has not been that great. Again, I don't know what the excuse is. I seem to have lots of time on my hands, but I definitely want to put more time and energy into the channel and kind of, you know, I think if you look at the videos over the course of the few years I've been doing it, it does feel like I get on kind of a trajectory of doing one thing for a while, and then I kind of do another thing for a while. And so
I could not help noticing that you did, I think, 2 episodes of the Orville season 2, and you just stopped. You're like, no, I'm not doing this.
Yeah, that was one that, like, I enjoyed the Orville, but I just wasn't enjoying it at the same level that I was like, gosh, I really want to sit down and make a video about this every week, you know? So I'm still, you know, it's funny, the Orville, I have season 1 on DVD upstairs, and I've watched up to the season finale, and I still haven't watched the season finale or really? Season 2 yet. Yeah, so.
Wow. I mean,
I got to get back to that.
It's been a long time ago. Season 3 is almost here. Well, it's not almost, but, you know, at some point.
Yeah.
Well, you are a big Star Trek book lover guy. Because, as you mentioned, you did literally Trek podcast, and then of course on your channel you had most of Trek Lit, quite a few books that you read. And I think the last video, they did an update video recently, and you said that there's one or two books that you really want to check out and review and just give your overall opinion. How many books did you read? And the most important question that obviously after this, does it matter in terms of story and everything, that does it makes it less enjoyable that you know that in theory, and I hate to do this, but not part of the real canon?
Yeah.
Does it make it less valuable?
Those are some good questions. As far as the number of books I've read, I have no idea. I can tell you how many books I've reviewed on my website, treklit.com. That's kind of where I started keeping track. Before that, I'd read a ton. And the reason I started that actually was because I'd pick up a Star Trek novel and I'd be like, did I read this one? I don't remember. What's this about? And I'd get halfway through it and be like, oh yeah, I did read this one. I remember kind of what's going on. So that whole thing started as just a way for me to keep track so I could refer to these reviews and say, oh, that's what I thought about that one. And, you know, I guess other people liked reading them too, so that's kind of cool. But yeah, as far as whether or not they're canon, that's kind of something that just going into Star Trek novels, you kind of have to make peace with. For me, I know that none of these stories are canon, and don't let anyone tell you differently. No Star Trek novel is canon, even when they say, like, oh, it's canon until it's not. Well, that means it's not canon, because the TV show or the movie can come along and just wipe it out at any time. And you just kind of have to make your peace with that a little bit. I have great novels that I've read over the years that have been completely wiped out. So an early original series novel, The Final Reflection by John M. Ford, which is all about the Klingons. Now, the Klingons, as they've been shown in TNG and onwards, have just completely wiped that from canon. Like, it just does not, that story doesn't work. It's still a great story. It's still on my shelf, and I'll probably someday pick it up and read it again someday. You know, it's not necessary for it to fit perfectly within canon for it to be a very good story. I'd say the novel Federation is another one. First Contact came out, like, I think 2 years or a year after that book came out, and immediately made it not fitting in continuity. Wow. But it's still a great novel, you know. So yeah, I can understand how maybe they might have less relevance to some people, and I totally get that. But at the same time, it's just as a longtime Star Trek novel reader, it's something I've just had to kind of make my peace with.
But it does enrich the connection to the to the franchise itself, to the not to the Star Trek universe itself, I suppose. Mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't read a full book. I'm so sad to admit. I have, I think, two or three books on my shelf. I have not read any of them fully, which I feel so bad about. I even picked up, not this month, but last month, the Voyager book, you know, the Full Circle.
Oh, yeah, very good novel.
I started, you see, this is where I'm kind of at, like, not far off. I still have like 400 pages to go through. But it started out as a really good book, and because of what happens in the beginning, I'm still like kind of interested, like, hey, how is that gonna be working out, or what's happened with that character, or like why those things happening in there, which in some cases it's I think it's truly amazing, but this is something that I definitely have to get into.
It's a good one to start with. It's an excellent novel, and Kirsten Beyer is an incredible writer, so you've made a good choice there to start with.
Yeah, I have tried with many other ones as well. I think I have a DS9 one that I got as a present, the Endless or the Something Sacrifice. It's a DS9 one.
Mm, okay.
I know Ruggle is the main character. You probably know the title. The Endless Sacrifice?
Oh, The Never-Ending Sacrifice.
Never-Ending Sacrifice, there you go.
Yeah, yeah, that's actually a really good one as well. Una McCormick is one of my favorite authors as well.
Okay, I'll definitely have to pick these up. I really tried hard to get through this Full Circle book by, you know, by the end of last month for the Trek Book Club. I just, sorry Rob if you're listening to this, I tried but I failed.
It's so, all good, you know. there's no like grading system for being a Star Trek fan, you know. You like what you like, and you know, read the books if you want, and there's no timer on it, so.
So if you would have to like, let's say, recommend one for anyone who never read a book, what would you recommend?
Ooh, that's a tough one. That's the kind of thing where I would start to pull them and like ask, like, what are you into? Which series do you like? That kind of thing. If you're looking for like just a solid, good Star Trek novel, like original series, I'd say Spock's World by Diane Duane is a really interesting novel. You know, it kind of explores the history of Vulcan, and as well as like a crisis that's happening on Vulcan in like the modern times, and by modern I mean, you know, Kirk, Spock and McCoy are there, kind of thing. And there's some really great really great Spock McCoy interactions, which, you know, that's one of my favorite things from Star Trek. So
You mentioned that there's a crisis in Vulcan, I kind of started thinking, like, what the hell are they called arguing about? Like, what can be the big crisis? But I guess I have to read the book to find out. So, I know we talked about quite a lot in terms of relation to Star Trek, but I'm really curious, and I asked this from all of my guests, so probably you know what I'm going to ask. When you think about Star Trek, someone from the very far, just, you know, you're doing your random things in a day, and then someone from the very first shouts Star Trek, what is the first thing that comes to your mind?
That's a really good question. I think for me, Star Trek, what immediately comes to mind is kind of what I was talking about earlier, that hope for the future, that optimism that, you know, we as a species are going to get through this and come together. And, you know, not that it'll just all happen one day, it'll take a whole lot of work, but it's something to strive towards. And the other thing that I always think of when it comes to Star Trek is a group of people working together to make the world better, and they're competent, they're compassionate, they're very good at their jobs, they trust science, they trust rationality, they trust, you know, examining the problem, and instead of, you know, reacting emotionally to it, they instead do things that will make a positive difference, if that makes sense. A little bit rambly answer maybe, but those are the kind of things that come to my mind when I think of Star Trek.
So everything basically that we don't have without being because when you said like, you know, I totally agree with you. I mean, it's interesting that when you think about it, it's not necessarily just the ship or just a character like Kirk or Spock or Picard or you know, the Enterprise or the station, but having this nation that having this notion of the show itself, and it's kind of what's missing from real life, which would be awesome to have. So I guess the main question, and you know, that's basically the whole podcast about, what is that thing that you know, if you wrap yourself around as a warm blanket, just like you do at the moment because of the cold in the basement, if that blanket is Star Trek, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, I think, and it's I love the name of the podcast and I love the concept, because that is what Star Trek is to me. Like, Star Trek has been a comfort to me in times when things are rough and that sort of thing. And I think it's, you know, it's everything I mentioned before, but also the relationships between these people. Like, I don't know how to put this exactly in words, but like, I can watch an episode of Deep Space Nine and I see like Bashir and O'Brien sit down at Quark's bar and share a drink together and play darts or something, and I'm just like, you know, they're 400, 300 years in the future, whatever, but they're people, you know, they're people just like us. And that to me is comforting, that, you know, I know it's fiction, but when you watch Star Trek, you can imagine we'll be around in that time, and we'll be confronting things that we never thought imaginable, but we'll be doing it with our friends by our side and people that we can count on. And I just, something about that just makes me really happy. You know, there's so much on television, and I don't mean to knock other stuff on television, but there's so much on TV where, you know, the drama comes from a place of, oh, our coworkers, we have to have an argument every 2 minutes and yell about what we're going to do and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But you rarely get that on Star Trek. You know, there's disagreements, there's that sort of thing, but at the end they always all come together for a solution. And especially if you watch TNG, I mean, that was a thing. Roddenberry said, like, they never argue. They don't have these interpersonal arguments that, you know, and maybe from a writer's perspective, that makes it harder to write and that sort of thing. But it created this ideal of just competent people working together and these strong relationships that just really comforts me for sure.
That's beautiful. Well then, thank you very much. It was really awesome to sit down and talk about yourself and the love of Star Trek, and you know, just get this warm blanket feeling that you're probably feeling more than I do at the moment. based on your apparel.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me on. This is, I think, a wonderful idea for a podcast, and it's been a lot of fun talking about it and sharing this stuff. So I love that, you know, you're making this forum for people to share what this thing that's so important to all of us means to us. So it's been great.
No, I did, and thank you again for joining, and I hope I will welcome you back in future episodes. We dive into a bit more into different aspects of the show in a segment that I have not revealed yet for many people, but will do. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining, and for all of you at listeners, if you want to connect with Dan, so help me out in here, where everyone can find you aside your YouTube channel and Twitter.
For sure. Yeah, so yeah, Twitter at Kurtratz, Positively Trek, like you said, is our new podcast. You can find that on Twitter as well, at Positively Trek. Our Star Trek literary podcast, Literary Treks, on the Trek FM network. And those two podcasts you can find wherever you get your podcasts. And yeah, man, I'm doing too much stuff. I got a bunch of stuff out there. So yeah, just search Kurtratz. You'll find a bunch of stuff.
All right. Well, thank you again for being here. Thank you again for listening to another episode of Warm Blanket. Live long and prosper. And that was it for this episode. I really hope that you enjoyed it, and rest assured, new episode will be coming out every week where we sit down with a Trekkie to find out what makes us feel good about Star Trek and to discover what is our warm blanket made of. If you really enjoy listening to this podcast, please leave a review on your favorite podcasting app. It would really mean a lot to me. I also would like to give a special shout out to our Patreon supporters, as they really make a big difference on the creation of this podcast. To find out more about how you can support this audio adventure, please visit trekkerprize.com/podcast, where you can also listen to the previous episodes. Thank you again for listening to yet another episode of the Warm Blanket Podcast, and I'll see you in the next episode. Live long and prosper.